Communication side, and Stephanie Skilba, Vice President. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
Hello and welcome to WGTD's. Our guest today, it is Shelley Moore Krajacek, an English language arts teacher at South Milwaukee High School in South Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Shelley has been an educator for 23 years, and recently she was honored by the National Teachers Hall of Fame with recognition as one of only five teachers who receive this national career teachers, such as Shelley, through a recognition program, which is what we're talking about today. But that's not the whole of it, because obviously we want to know everything we can in this short period of time we have with Shelley Krajacek about her views on education, her trajectory, her life in education, and so on. So, Shelley, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Yeah, wonderful. So tell us a little bit about your career in teaching and how you got to where you are today.
Well, I am a third generation Wisconsin public school teacher on both sides of my family. My parents met teaching. So some would say it's the family business. And it was either me or my little brother, and he doesn't like people. So it's a good thing it was me. He's much happier with computers. And I admit, I fought the family business. I was going to go to law school, and then I did student teaching and just knew it's where I belonged. And I taught most of my career up in Northwest Wisconsin at the Ellsworth Community School District, a small rural school district where I taught English and drama. And then a few years ago, moved to Kenosha and started teaching in South Milwaukee. I mentioned that I get asked, moving from a rural school district to more of an urban school district. Obviously, the population looks differently, but otherwise, high poverty exists in the farming community where I was, as well as the transient population I experienced in South Milwaukee. So it's really not that different. They're more similar than they are different. And I think that's one of the things I've really appreciated understanding. The biggest difference is my references. I had to learn a lot about farming culture to teach in Ellsworth. And I don't need those references in South Milwaukee. Nobody knows what a pole is committed to learning if we are not ourselves committed to learning. So I'm getting a doctorate because it was the next thing to do. I don't plan to leave teaching or leave a classroom, but the program here at UW-Milwaukee is a phenomenal education program. It's nationally renowned. And so I said, this is my next step. Let's learn about other populations of students and just continue to keep learning. And so that's what sent me there.
Great.
And of grammar and rules of writing and all of that nerdy stuff that keeps English teachers going. But let me summarize it by conversation I actually had this year with a student who wants to go into teaching. And she was deciding, do I want to be an English teacher or do I want to get a broad field social studies degree and teach psychology? And I said, the truth is 90% of teaching, especially at high school level, especially with the content area of English, it is psychology. So I am helping students get when it's honest personal writing. I am helping them break through sometimes walls of trauma, all kinds of things that have impacted their lives. And so for me, not you will get swallowed up. You will get lost at UW-Madison. It is an incredible school. It is not for you. Here's information on Parkside and Platt. And then I told them what I had seen and experienced with them in the classroom and observed about the way they interact with others and the way they make friends and where they're comfortable. And Lauren looks at me and she goes, how do you know me so well? Yes.
Yeah. And this is about their development. This is about them growing as people, not just learning where to put a comma.
Exactly. The comma is just a bonus.
Right. It helps. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a former English teacher myself, so I'm with you.
Wonderful.
So tell us more about your dissertation. I'm very interested in what you're doing in your grad program.
Well, I started out wanting to study how texts are selected in English language arts classes, and very much so started in a space of trying to understand what books were picked and why they were picked and how all of that kind of stuff. And as often happens, that research got boring after that English language arts teachers believe anti-racist pedagogy is, that is the teaching of understanding system view as the systems that created our public education systems, and for that matter, our private education systems. So they understand how those impact student learning, and that you might think you're making this choice based on this standard in your classroom, when really it's historically driven by the music in my field.
So what's a rule or a perspective that's current in high school English?
I started my dissertation talking about the texts that are chosen. So sometimes people will say, well, if we just had a more diverse offering of books, we will reach different students in different ways. It's not so much the text itself, but how the text is taught. So the best example I can give, probably the most famous novel taught by a Black man in America, is Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison. And it's a brilliant, beautiful book. And I'm sure as a former English person, you have yourself read it, possibly taught it. The problem is, do I choose to teach it from understanding how he has chosen or been forced to remove himself from society because of the systems around it in education?
Mm. So what I hear you saying is that, for example, in teaching a novel like Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison, you would recommend looking at the context.
So whatever your perspective is, it's not wrong. You have it for a reason. Just be able to explain to me why. Just be able to substantiate your answer and you're correct. It's always right, because it's your interpretation based on your lived experiences. So it's important. Yes. So I will never tell them they're wrong, just not finished.
It's part of the larger story. And does that help you? Does that rule or dictum help you as you guide students in dialogue?
Class discussion, sometimes small group, sometimes large group. But the first thing I do is I say, don't come to me first on your essay, go to your peer, especially go to somebody with whom you think you'll disagree. If you think you've chosen a controversial topic, choose the person on the opposite side. You need to be able to engage in that dialogue and that conversation, because you need to learn from each other. The only way you discover gaps in your argument is by hearing the other side of the argument. Mm. And so that is the number one thing I encourage. And I couch it in the theory that when they get to college in a year or two, their professor's not going to be an email away. It's based on that peer-to-peer interaction, learning to have a conversation respectfully, but in a way that challenges and questions and doesn't, I try to get them out of attribution so that when we're having class discussion, they don't say, well, as Bree said, et cetera, like, let's not attribute. You might remember that frame, but you also are interpreting it through your lens. Mm. So that student might have actually said the opposite of what you heard, but you, based on your experiences, how you heard things, how you showed up in that moment, heard this one thing. So assigning attribution when it's not even necessarily accurate is not acceptable. So that's one of the things I try to teach them, is that you don't necessarily understand the full lens. And when somebody, you know, they answer a question brought up by one student in 30 seconds to a minute in class.
You have taught drama. I don't know if you still do, but does that kind of activity enter into your teaching at all?
It's impossible not to. You are right. I tell people I am a reformed drama teacher. I did teach drama for 20 years. And then when I had my daughter, I still design the sets and I help out at South Milwaukee. To find that dramatic, creative, expressive side. I definitely teach from all over. It's not unusual to find me sitting on a table, or just I'll plop down next to a student and they're like, what are we working at? Or, you know, what are your standards from the state of Wisconsin for English language arts? I mean, English language arts it's writing, reading, speaking, and listening. And so it's one of the big parts, but it's not something we focus on that much. And COVID definitely hurt it. So in my school, we're definitely making a concerted effort to make it more a part of meet each other right now. Nice. So there's a whole piece where I just have to introduce them to each other and say, this is this person's name and this is this person's name. And sometimes I'm the only person in the room who knows the names of other students. And that's been interesting. I mean, part of it is COVID, part of it's cell phones. When you go to lunch and just sit on your phone, how are you going to meet anybody?
Yeah.
I think is really great for the upcoming generation, but nonetheless, getting them, you know, trying to get a phone policy where phones have to go away.
The challenge, and now there's AI
incorporated into our sophomore honors English curriculum, because there is a time and a place for things like that. It has different relationships with students. You understand, you learn. So we're not changing who's in front of a classroom thing. Oh God, it started in the late 90s called hip hop pedagogy, which was it infiltrated English language arts. And it's like, oh, we're going to turn this, we're going to turn Shakespeare into a rap. And it's like, that's so condescending. So let's not do that. Let's not make assumptions about our students' interests based on what they might look like externally or what we might assume about their home lives, and let them make decisions in determining their education. So all of that is what led me to this. And it stems from two very specific incidents in my career. My very first year of teaching.
Okay. Yes. Before we get into those, hold that thought. I just want to give station identification. This is WGTD Radio. You're listening to Education Matters, and we're talking to Shelley Moore Krajacek, who recently was honored with a National Teaching Award, and she's talking about her approach to pedagogy. So thank you. Go ahead, Shelley. You were about to share a couple of stories.
So very interesting perceptions, but this young man was raised that way. Like, he came to me as a 14-year-old raised that way and didn't even realize.
And that could be a yes or no question. I'm assuming that you're going to use a methodology that doesn't allow you to answer the question with a simple yes or no. So have you worked on the methodology section yet?
Yeah. So we're like, a big part of it is that
responses or categories of responses you might receive.
I haven't started that part yet. I did some pre-research with some of my colleagues just to kind of see what current teachers think is true. And it was interesting because a lot of it focused on text selection. So it'll be an interesting comparison for me to see what they say.
So on the note of text selection, this is their own shelves, or how does that work?
It varies greatly, especially in Wisconsin, there's 421 school districts and that many different school boards that are affecting and impacting different choices. In South Milwaukee, I have a school district that respects the elves, whatever that might look like. So whenever somebody says to me, why would you want, especially the thing that's been the focus, literature for the LGBTQ+ community, why would you want that available in your space? And it's, my number one goal is to have my students be safe and feel safe. I've been to enough student funerals in 23 years of teaching, and I'd rather not have to go to any.
Yeah. As you know, there's been a lot of pushback, most markedly recently through the text of Project 2025, which was created by a host of conservative organizations working in concert. Maybe people will recognize the name, the Heritage Foundation, as one of the primary participants. And among other things, that document calls for the elimination of the Department of Education, and it also calls for it's online and read it for themselves. But, I checked in with you before we started.
I can start there because I'd never heard of critical race theory until I was working on my doctorate, because it's a doctoral level theory of analyzing research that actually considers all races. So white is a factor, it turns out. So the way things get twisted is the place where all can be lifted up and have the potential to be. And I think one of the problems with a lot of the critique that has happened is that it says that innately, like, you're teaching that all of a certain race is bad, or all of a certain gender did this, or all of a certain whatever. And it's like, well, no. Actually, there's people who stood up against some of these things that happened. And to me, the easiest thing to talk about is redlining. And when redlining happened, and basically, you know, communities were told you couldn't get a loan for a house within certain areas, and how, like, it's important to, that happened. It's only existed since 1980. A lot of people don't realize that. Even though I would argue our founding fathers, if you look back at historical documents, there are no bigger supporters of the importance and value of public education. Some would argue they would not have taught everybody. But Thomas Jefferson in particular has written numerous things about the value of public education. Yep, he wanted everybody to learn Latin, but he thought it was important that people understood how to read and write in order to vote. And so our forefathers believed in this. Our founding fathers believed in that. and wanted to encourage, he at least wanted to encourage people to vote. But so when I look at the U.S. Department of Education, why it was created in 1980, it was created in part because we were still dealing with systemic boundaries that existed. So some people say 1955, Brown versus Board happened. We ended segregation in schools. We are actually was embedded all of our values into a system that helps and lifts up the community. That's what the U.S. Department of Education is doing. I happen to think the current secretary is actually phenomenal. Miguel Cardona, he's really, he's a teacher's teacher. He gets it. but so, of course, there's an attack on the U.S. Department of Education because it, at its heart, the purpose of the U.S. Department of Education is to educate everybody so that everyone can vote. And if you want to control who votes and when they vote and how they vote, you make it so that they don't feel successful as voters.
That is very powerfully stated, and I don't want to add a word to it. I will ask you, however, how can we connect this very eloquent statement, if at all, to your interest in
history of my own family? My father negotiated the third comprehensive collective bargaining agreement in the state of Wisconsin after collective bargaining became law and then started to be used in the late 60s. My uncle negotiated the first in Janesville. So it really asks us to do, but knowing how to use policy in order to do that, it's tough. And so that's part of why I pursued this stuff. It was fun for me. I enjoy it. And so why not use it? Because at the end of the day, for me, it's about what can I do to help my students? And if the best way I can help my students have the type of education I think they deserve is by being an advocate for them, that's what I'm going to do.
That's fantastic. So you have this tremendous on-the-ground experience.
I'm going to give you one author who is prolific and amazing and accessible, and that is Jason Reynolds. And if anybody who has not had the pleasure of reading Jason Reynolds, especially my favorite is Long Way Down, which is written in verse, which some people think is not accessible to students, quite the opposite. They love it. It's great for them. But it is, it's a relatively new book. I believe it was 2017 it came out. He is the former, for the Library of Congress, was our youth administrator. Yeah, you go there. But it's indicative of, the complexity of school funding that gets us in this circumstance, and which is why we as a community need to work together to say, nope, librarians are important to us. Let's figure out how to prioritize that. It's one of the things I love about Kenosha, that it's prioritized the arts and that where there's festivals all the time and all these incredible opportunities for youth. The community needs to continue to support those things. But librarians, they're reading and they're going to conferences and they're learning about new literature. In a way that when I'm under a stack of essays, I don't necessarily have the opportunity to. And so if I can go to my librarian, and I happen to serve on the KUSD personnel committee with the former librarian at one of the middle schools in Kenosha, and Mark would get excited about a book and share that information with me. He'll be teaching English next year, and those students will get the benefit of his expertise when it comes to reading.
From the 15th century, but I'm just curious, a couple of classics that we still teach?
Well, you might not be surprised, but 1984 is shockingly relevant again. That's one I've had students have a lot of interest in lately. I'm trying to think, there's a recent memoir by a person who had lived through the Bosnian War as a teenager. I try to teach a lot of memoir. I find that students find that interesting.
Oh, fantastic. Well, Shelley Moore Krajacek, National Honor Teacher of the Year, if I got that phrase correct, it's a mouthful.
1 of 5.
Thank you so much for being our guest today on Education Matters. It's been a delight.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard Saturday mornings at 10:30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are at
gtd.org or call 564-3744.
I'm Gregory Berg, and I hope that you can join me for Monday's morning show here on WGTD. I'm going to be speaking with Dr. Gerald Mast, professor of political science at Carthage College, about the current presidential race. We'll talk about the first presidential debate, about the Republican National Convention about to get underway in Milwaukee, and about rising calls for President Biden to withdraw from the race. We'll touch on all
Selton for Wisconsin Literacy, and she provides literacy education support.